believed in the last years of the 19th century that human affairs were being watched from the green hills of Albion. No one could have dreamed that they were being scrutinized as someone with a microscope studies creatures that swarm and multiply in a drop of water. With infinite complacency, authors wrote this and that within existing genres, serene in their assurance that imagination was the province of children and fantasists. Few men even considered the possibility that a new genre of literature could be gestating. And yet, across the Atlantic, a mind immeasurably more insightful than the average regarded the travails of his fellow Earthmen with critical eyes, and slowly and surely molded the future into being.
By now, I'm sure most of you realize I've just shamelessly ripped off the subject of this week's profile in Cinemania, Herbert George Wells. I'm not alone in ripping him off. Hundreds of hacks just like me have spent the past century ripping off H.G. Wells, and thousands more will continue ripping him off in the centuries to come. It's just what happens when your work is so influential, you get credit for creating an entire genre. Okay, sure. Mary Wollstonecraft, Shelley, and Jules Verne are credited with writing science fiction in their time, but sci-fi didn't exist as a term when they were alive, did it? Hugo Gernsback, the publisher of the pulp magazine Amazing Stories, coined the term science fiction while H.G. Wells was alive and writing the stories that made up the backbone of Gernsback's rag. So there, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. You want something more academic? Go read any one of 100 dozen different academic papers about the guy. This is a profile in Cinemania, and around here we have a certain style to maintain, you dig? Oh, all right, fine. H.G. Wells may not have invented the genre of science fiction per se, but he did establish a key convention shared by all real works of science fiction since. Sci-fi observes social and technological trends, extrapolates the natural endpoint of those trends, then uses that extrapolation to paint a speculative picture of the future that gives the readers just enough distance from their biases so they can contemplate sociopolitical commentary without cognitive dissonance kicking in. Which means that, yes, sci-fi has always been woke. And no, Ayn Rand doesn't count. I'm talking about sci-fi, not fantasy, remember? And what a society to live in! Born in 1866, Wells was a young man as the century turned and the age of steam began. He lived to see the coming of the machine era. Two world wars come and go. He was there when people first took a steam engine to the seaside, and he saw how those innovations inevitably led to the horrors of mechanized warfare. Anyhow, the amount of Cinemania for which H.G. Wells is responsible cannot be overstated. As the intellectual father of science fiction, you can draw a direct line from H.G. Wells to Star Trek. One of the earliest examples of science fiction in cinema comes from 1919, The First Men in the Moon, adapted from Wells' 1901 novel by the same name. This film established the trend of making a sci-fi movie a special effects extravaganza, but more importantly, it planted the seed of space travel in the minds of the general public, et voila, 50 years later, men really did walk on the moon. Not content merely with interplanetary travel, H.G. Wells also established the modern trope of time travel by use of a wonderful machine rather than fanciful spells or magic potions, which means you can also directly connect H.G. Wells to Doctor Who. His 1895 novel, The Time Machine, not only coined the term time machine, but it was itself adapted into multiple feature films. Wells' fertile imagination birthed a whole spectrum of temporal narrative devices, of which the DeLorean, the TARDIS, and Rick Sanchez's portal gun are only the most popular.
No time travel, it's dumb.
Wells was also notable for eschewing the dewy-eyed idealism that was so prominent among his contemporary fiction writers. The Time Machine featured a far-future post-apocalyptic dystopia inhabited by both the remnants of a society that had destroyed itself and the chumps, cannibalistic humanoid underground mutant people, who fed upon them. You can also connect superhero sci-fi to H.G. Wells via his 1897 novel, The Invisible Man. Once again, Wells approached this story from the perspective that humans granted superpowers are still fundamentally human. The protagonist of the story winds up being as much of a creep as you might imagine an invisible man would become, and is eventually beaten to death by a rampaging mob fed up with his abuse of power. Remember, kids, if you can't think of an ending to your novel, there's always angry mob justice. Notably, Alan Moore's comic book masterwork, The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, features the Invisible Man as well as many other characters and situations originated by H.G. Wells. We won't discuss the movie. As far as we're concerned, that movie has been relegated to the hazardous materials vault right next to Leonard Part 6 and no longer exists. No, I won't take any further questions on that point. Moving on. Wells arguably foresaw the technological modification of life itself, first via his 1896 novel The Island of Dr. Moreau, and later on in his 1904 novel The Food of the Gods and How It Came to Earth, both of which have seen multiple cinema adaptations. Many have argued that Moreau foresaw genetic modification, but frankly, that was more the province of the novel's 1932 film adaptation, The Island of Lost Souls. In the novel, the eponymous doctor's experiments were purely surgical and psychological. Manners don't maketh man. Moreau does. What is more clear, however, is that the novel notably makes a critique of the British Empire's justification for expansion. Moreau mercilessly macerates the fecklessness of imposing civilization upon other cultures and exposes the cruel Machiavellian ethics underpinning such a drive. More than anything, both novels can be read as a cry for the establishment of codes of scientific and medical ethics, neither of which existed at the time. All these titles pale by comparison, however, to Wells's best-known work, the 1896 novel The War of the Worlds. At one stroke, Wells created both the tropes of alien invasion and post-apocalypse survival drama. It certainly can be taken at face value, a story of humanity losing to a bunch of bug-eyed monsters who go full kaiju on London. However, this novel should be read as Wells's pointed criticism of the excesses of 19th century British imperialism. A lifelong anti-imperialist, Wells understood that political conservatives can't understand the suffering of others until they themselves are affected. Therefore, he undertook to dupe into empathy those readers whose politics might lead them to reflexively dismiss humanitarian complaints. Wells collected in his observations of the British Empire in all its merciless rapacity, the contemptuous wielding of technological superiority summed up in the brutal little couplet, "Whatever happens, we have got the Maxim gun, and they have not." And he projected it all upon a fictional alien invader who did unto Britain as it had done unto the world. The response to The War of the Worlds was, and continues to be, explosive. It should really tell you something that this one specific work of fiction has been continually adapted and readapted every generation over the past 130 years, sometimes several times. There have been 7 feature film adaptations between 1953 and 2023. Numerous teleplays, comics, spin-off novels, hell, even a rock opera from 1978 that really slaps. No, seriously, go check it out, and when you do, make sure you wear the good headphones. Orson Welles, no relation, did a radio theater adaptation of The War of the Worlds in 1938, which, despite the fact that the book had been on the shelves at that point for over 40 years, still managed to cause an outbreak of mass hysteria. Or so the papers of the time would have you believe. As for Cinemania, well, every single movie you've ever seen about alien invasion is a direct descendant of The War of the Worlds, as is every movie about a doomed band of post-apocalyptic survivors. Wells also pioneered military sci-fi. The alien weapons wielded by the Martians in The War of the Worlds, though fantastically described as heat rays and black smoke, were functionally directed energy weapons and chemical munitions, both of which would be realized in the 20th century. His 1904 short story, The Land Ironclads, envisioned the invention of armored vehicles, and even foresaw tactics of armored combat that later would be termed Blitzkrieg. H.G. Wells was like a modern Da Vinci, except his monstrous superweapons worked, dammit. Other novels imagine technical advances such as intercontinental jet aircraft, skyscrapers, superhighways, and moving sidewalks. Art influenced life, which in turn influenced art, and that's how we got Futurama. Wells' imaginings were not limited to the technological. He also understood social mechanisms very well. He foresaw and wrote about the development of mass media and its inevitable use to disperse advertising and propaganda. Elements found in his novels The Sleeper Wakes and The Shape of Things to Come predicted that unrestrained capitalism would dissolve the family unit, fragment society, and lead to the isolation, alienation, stultification, and impoverishment of the working class. All things we are seeing come to pass today. It should come as no surprise that H.G. Wells was on the left side of the political spectrum. He advocated and practiced free love. We here at the Cinemania Society posit that his initials stood for Hot Guy Wells. Nothing like a big old Victorian walrus mustache to get your motor running, am I right? Well, as a socialist, Wells believed that government should be used as a tool to improve the lives of its citizens, that systems of aristocracy should be dismantled, that wealth should be distributed more fairly and humanely, and that power structures required accountability. As an atheist, he believed in science as a progressive force, that humanity would improve itself via scientific progress, and as human understanding of the universe increased, the evolution of an enlightened society would inevitably produce something akin to Star Trek's luxury queer space communism. Despite his unreservedly leftist and anti-imperialist politics, H.G. Wells earned numerous highly placed admirers, including Winston Churchill, who frequently made use of Wells' passages on the floor of Parliament. Not half bad for a working-class son of a draper. Despite his seeming ability to predict fecklessness and abuse wrought by self-serving hands in so many other realms of science and technology, Wells had a major blind spot. He was an ardent supporter of the theory of eugenics. He advocated this policy for decades, along with many other science-minded progressives of his era. However, the theoretical can often be very different from the practical. Wells spent his twilight years repudiating eugenics after the actions of the Third Reich forced him to confront the practice and not just the theory. Wells adjusted his opinions based on evidence, as should any rational man of science. Given his politics, it should also be no surprise to learn that H.G. Wells was equally prolific in nonfiction. For decades, he extensively explored the mechanisms and political structures that could bring about a more humane world. His politically powerful fans ensured Wells got to be a key architect of what is now termed Western liberal democracy. After World War I, he was heavily involved in creating the League of Nations, and after observing its weaknesses and the eventual failure that led to World War II, he was instrumental in crafting its replacement, the United Nations. At the end of his life, Wells was involved in drafting the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Flawed though the UN is, it is a vast improvement over the rat's nest of petty squabbles between warlords and autocrats that preceded it. Hey, speaking of nuclear war, in recent decades, scholars studying the humanities have argued that sci-fi isn't just for nerds, it might very well have saved the world. Their argument? That the portrayals of a post-nuclear apocalypse Earth was so horrific that humanity did its goddamn best to ensure that no such scenario ever played out. If that is the case, H.G. Wells owns a share of responsibility for saving the world, for establishing the conventions of the genre. Oh, sure, there was all that stuff with the UN, but my money is on the sci-fi. You have to be able to imagine a better world before you can bring one about. This has been another Profile in Cinemania. This episode was written by Ethan Ireland and Andy Slack, and performed by Ethan Ireland. Music by Meteor at meteormusic.bandcamp.com. Profiles in Cinemania is a product of the Cinemania Society, LLC.